Ray Ferraro joins us. Ray, are you a coffee guy? Like, are you a light, medium, dark, decaf? Yeah. Do you drink?
Yes, I love coffee. I do very much. Every once in a while, I say, yeah, I'm going to cut down, and then I'm like, why am I going to cut down? I like it. There's worse vices to have than that, I think.
Sure. Strati told us he used to crush a cup right before a game. Did you?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No coffee.
Yep.
No. I'd have a Red Bull. Much different.
Oh, sorry.
How is that different?
Well, I don't need artificial to get myself buzzed for life, right? I'm naturally excited about life, you know. I feel, you know, that's kind of how I operate.
I like the taste of coffee. I enjoy one in the morning. Have one usually mid-morning. Usually have one just before I talk to Strutty so I don't fall asleep. You know, that sort of thing.
Jeez. Well, you are getting up there, right? You know, so when you start getting to your 60s, you got to make sure you have fuel to keep the energy all day.
Hey, look, Strutty, when you get up here where we are, the goal is to be on this side of the dirt. That is the goal every day.
And I guess at your size, you probably don't need like a quarter cup. You don't want to have too much. You'll be buzzing all day.
No, you don't want too much. I mean, you know, like some of the stuff you can get, like, you know, it promotes like, you know, they say it can help promote alertness and sharpness. And that's the part I think you're not getting from the Red Bull. Clearly, I'm listening to your show and you're missing the sharpness part. But maybe you could, you know, Gregor, maybe you can get them, you know, some... Give him some puzzles and things to work on that part of the day. I think you can help him out.
Yeah, it's you know what, Ray? I'll look into that. You know, maybe I'll just what I'll start is I'll mix up a batch of the Black Rifle. But you know what? They actually have the 5-alarm blend. I'll get the 5-alarm blend. All right, that's in honor of all the firefighters. I'll get the 5-alarm blend of Black Rifle. I'll make one for Strutty just so he's perky to start the show. I'll have that brewing when he comes in.
You could get him some crayons. He can work on the alphabet. I mean, I think he'll be ready to go.
But did you want me to see my high school transcript? Honor roll. Honor roll.
Hey, Ray, before I just wait. Hey, well, ask Strutty about the test. He challenged his departmental test because he thought that they marked it incorrectly. He went and rewrote it and got a lower mark than he did the first time.
Yeah, no, I didn't. No, I
need to know about your IQ, Strutty.
No. The test was faulted. It was faulty. I still believe I was I was so good. Chemistry, Miss Anamanchuk and I destroyed that school for years in chemistry. Then all of a sudden I failed the departmental. Come on, test is faulty.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ray, you want to know what's faulty right now is the offense in the West Division because, you know, like as some people are like, oh, the North scores, defense sucks. Well, the thing is the Canadian teams averaged 3.09 goals a game last year. They're at 3.12 this year, actually 3.11 after last night. But the other three divisions are all well below the average at the end of last season, which was 2.97. They're at 2.94, 2.85, and the West is 2.75. Usually scoring is up early, then it goes down. But this year it's already below last year. Why do you think that is?
I think the fact that you see the same team all the time, there's, you know, you're by the halfway point of game one, you've already video scouted that team, so you're familiar with what they do. By game two, it's like you're scrimmaging against yourself. You know their team. You can't catch anybody on bad travel. Everybody's got the same travel. Everybody's playing multiple games in a week, so you're not catching too often a rested team against somebody that's just worn out. I think all those factors, familiarity doesn't breed offense. Familiarity breeds defense. And I think that more than anything is, is probably as big a factor. I mean, Montreal had that one, you know, 6 or 7 game stretch. They were scoring 5 goals a game. And until last night, they had scored 13 goals in their previous 7. So look, the numbers look great for about 5 guys, and everybody else is kind of scratching and clawing away.
Ray, a couple of weeks ago, the Leafs and the Habs were playing for first place, and now, you know, what is it, 15 days later, their coach is fired. You know, what changed that quickly for the Habs that this was the needed step?
Well, I think a couple of things, Strutty. Like, number one is everything was hitting just on the mark, right? You know, they were scoring goals. They were all the additions that Marc Bergevin had made really were, you know, out front and doing really, you know, giving great value for those deals. They looked like, you know, they looked like a team that was going to challenge for the division. You're right. I think some of the problems they had have been baked in Montreal over the past couple of years, and eventually they just come back to roost. So there's a couple. Their power play has been terrible for a couple of years. That's number one. Number two, I don't know of any coach. You guys tell me. Maybe you can think of one, but that played four lines in a balanced way like Claude Julien did. I don't recall, or I can't think of another team that does that per se. And that's fine if you're getting production, but they're not getting much offensively. And that's been another trademark of his teams. Good 5-on-5. They don't score a lot. That was the critique late in his tenure in Boston. Bruce Cassidy came in, they changed a few things, and all of a sudden the Bruins were scoring more often. I think Claude's a good coach. I think it felt and seemed stale in Montreal. Like the air around them, the comments that you were reading from the players, like things had to change. And as much as we talk about it, I think this is a real valuable point, is that there's only 36 games left in the year. You know, in another year, maybe he would have got another 15 or 18 games to get past the halfway point or to the halfway point. Well, they're past the halfway or right at the halfway point now. You don't have time. You got to make a choice. And the last thing would be, and you know, you guys are watching it firsthand in Edmonton. If your goalie can't stop the puck, you don't have a chance. You know, Edmonton's, you know, playing great. They're, what are they, 10-1-2 or something like that? And, gee, what a coincidence. Mike Smith comes back. He plays really well. Now that gets Koskinen a little rest. He makes 42 saves the other night. Like, you can't outplay your goaltending very often. Carey Price has an .893 save percentage. Like, you can't win like that. I don't care if he's supposed to be the best guy in the world or not. That number means that you're going to lose a lot.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. And, you know, Ray, it's funny. Like, the order's 10-2. They've really switched now. They've got depth scoring from everywhere. They're cutting down on their goals against. It helps with the goaltender. They're not gifting goals by making egregious defensive errors like they were on a nightly basis playing Santa Claus to start the season. And, you know, it is an up-and-down one. But, you know, Edmonton, when you look at it, because they're getting balanced scoring, and they've got those two guys in McDavid and Draisaitl, well, like, I don't know, can McDavid continue at 2 points a game like he has been? Like, man, I'm not going to rule it out considering how good of a player is. You never know. But, you know, you look at a team like Montreal, Ray, and you were a power play guy. Their power play has stunk for a few years. And I look at this, and I went back and I checked the numbers today. So high shot volume from the blue line doesn't seem to have success in the NHL on power plays anymore. Yet Jeff Petrie and Shea Weber are pounding the puck from the blue line consistently on their power play. They only have one forward in double digits in shots. That's Toffoli. And the second guy, Kotkaniemi, he's on their second unit, Ray. So if you're a coach, would that be the first change you'd make, is, okay, guys, like, either we're taking one of Petrie or Weber off our first unit, because it just doesn't work in today's NHL to score with heavy shot volume from the blue line on the power play.
Well, the problem, yes, the answer is yes. The second part to that is the problem when you're relying on volume or shots at all from the point is, generally speaking, when the puck goes back to the point, most guys are standing still. So the shot comes, the goalie stops it, or it gets blocked. You don't retrieve it very well because nobody's in motion. You know, we used to say, when the, you know, ball, power play struggling, get it to the point and crash the net. It doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. A, because the goalies are better. B, because the puck doesn't get there as often. The penalty killers are way more aggressive out top, so the guy that's shooting the puck doesn't have enough room to shoot it. I find it almost a defeating way to work your power play if you're not using the bottom half of the ice. I prefer to have one guy up at the top, but I want to use that bumper position as an attacker, not as a tourist. And when you're volume shooting from the point, that guy in the middle of the ice, he's just standing there, spinning around like a top. He doesn't do anything.
Well, Ray, I'm with you. I wonder if they don't have to move Shea Weber into the Ovechkin position.
But they do, and it doesn't change.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't mind that. I don't, you know, I don't mind that at all. I mean, but you've got to, that can't be your I guess Ovechkin is their number one, danger spot on the power play. But when people think, okay, I could put Weber there because he can shoot it right through the back of the net, Washington has about three or four other options.
Yep.
If you take Ovechkin and put me or you standing there, they got other options where the puck goes to Backstrom because Kuznetsov, Oshie, Carlson walks and shoots it. Like, they have other options. It doesn't seem like Montreal is very creative in building options for that power play.
Oh, not at all. And the other thing about Ovi is, sure, he has a lot of one-timers, but a lot of them happen below the hash marks. It's also a skill to know how to read and find that opening. No offense to Shea Weber. He's never done that. Right, put a forward who I would assume at some point in their life has done that at least more regularly than him. I think that's putting lipstick on a pig if you think Shea Weber is suddenly going to have the offensive instincts of an Alex Ovechkin around the circle. I don't think that's even plausible.
How many times do you hear somebody say, "Oh, I think they should put Zdeno Chara in front of the net"? Yeah. What's he going to do there? Like, I know he's big, he's enormous, he's a condominium, but he's never played there. Making a little play in tight, facing the puck as opposed to, defending facing the puck is completely different. You can't just take a guy and think he's going to have all that stuff. I'm agreeing with you, Jason. What I'm saying is that if Weber's standing in that circle and that's one of your options, not your only option,
yeah,
you could probably do.
I guess where I'm going with this, guys, is they have to recreate what their power play looks like. If you want to get away from guys just bombing it from the point, then you have to change it. You have to change the way that works. I don't see Shea Weber as a guy that can work like a Tyson Barry, walking the line, wheeling and dealing. I don't see him as that guy. So if you don't put him in a place to shoot, the next spot is on the bench. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't want him shooting from the point and he can't wheel and deal like Barry, where else does he go?
No, he goes to the bench. I agree. I think it should be 4-1, right? Like, there's not many successful power plays that are 3-2 anymore. And that's, unless you have like a Tyson Barry type, like John Carlson, and they still only go 4-1, and Carlson, very mobile, but like, it's no different than Roman Josi, who's very electrifying offensively as a defenseman, but their power play stinks in Nashville for years too, because he's the one shooting the puck the most, and it just doesn't work. Like, Carlson barely shoots it, and that's why their power play is successful.
No, their power play is successful, not because John Carlson doesn't shoot it, but because when the puck gets into Nick Backstrom's hands, he's a magician. When it goes down on the goal line to Kuznetsov, he's awesome. TJ Oshie's one of the best bumper players in the league in between the circles. And they've got Ovechkin standing over there. They have multiple points of attack.
Yeah.
It works because it's creative and it varies the attack. Not because one guy can or cannot shoot the puck. If you take away that one shot, like Josi doesn't have the big shot, yeah, it hurts their power play. But if they had other options, their power play would be better.
No, but he shoots too much, I guess, is my point.
Well, then that's a design flaw.
Yeah,
I can't debate that with you. I'm not looking at the numbers. What I will tell you is any power play that relies on one thing is a power play that's dead. The penalty killers will figure it out. They'll take away that one option, and then you're standing around and you got no idea what's going on.
You know, Ray, just one more quick one for you. The power play goal that the Oilers scored last night, right off the draw, to me, that is a thing of beauty. And all five guys get their beaks wet, and it's in the net before, really, quite frankly, Vancouver even knows that they're in a penalty killing.
I love that play because how quickly the puck moved.
Oh, yeah.
What is amazing to think about on that play, if you're, if you're dissecting it or breaking it down, is when that puck gets, from Chiasson to Draisaitl in the slot, there are not many people in the game that know where the next play is as quickly as Draisaitl did there and can deliver it as crisply and on the tape as he did. Like, it was almost like the Chiasson pass was on the way, and he had already started his move because it was so fast to McDavid. Like, what a play. And then McDavid doesn't plunge it into his pads. He's smart enough to stop it, and he knows he's got enough room to hold it and put it. Like, that's a – man, you'd love to be able to dial that thing up a few times. What a gorgeous goal.
Well, I've seen them, right? They've been – like, that's comes from repetition, too, for sure. But you're right. Drysdale's passing skills are – like, I think he's the best passer, offense, forward and forehand, backhand in the NHL today. I'd put my money on him over any other player. But that play is one they've worked on in practice a lot, where they go, you know, down, Nurse sucks a little to the middle to move the top guy over, gives Nugent Hopkins room, down, tic-tac-toe, and for – McDavid to have that type of celebration, like right away he's pointing at Drysdale, and what you just said, players know when a guy makes a play that they're just like, dude, most guys can't make that play, and he just it look easy.
Well, here's the other thing though, and it's often my argument when teams say you've got to build after the so-and-so model or the Washington model or the Pittsburgh model. You can put other guys in that position and they can't do the same thing as the guy they're trying to replicate. There. So I could go stand 20 guys in the slot, and they can't do what Draisaitl did there. I watched TJ Oshie play that bumper spot, or Patrice Bergeron, who I think are two of the very best in that play there almost exclusively, and I'm like, man, other guys can't do what they do. They see the play, they got good hands, they got a good shot, they're smart, they support the puck. All those things that you kind of take for granted, and the team says, okay, we got to put someone in there like Oshie. Yeah, but it's not Oshie. And it doesn't work the same.
Ray, we appreciate your time. Oh, quickly, in 30 seconds, do you think the Claude Julien fire, do other teams say, oh, we got to follow suit, or is this a one-off?
Well, I'm going to say it's not a one-off, but I am going to say the elevation of the assistant coach to head coach is going to be the only way that teams are going to change coaches. In a pandemic with zero revenues, I can't imagine that somebody's going to all of a sudden open the book up for another coach to pay two guys to coach one team.
Yeah. Plus, I guess he'd have to quarantine for 2 weeks. So,
well, if it's a Canadian guy, or say a team was going to fire their coach in Canada, they hire the new coach, they don't tell anybody, he moves to Canada, he quarantines for 2 weeks, and then he's ready to go when you make the move. That would be the only way around it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fair. Well, good luck keeping that one secret.
Oh, nobody would notice.
Ray, have yourself a wonderful day. And, we will. I'll be looking if maybe you want to put up some alphabets for Strutty a little bit later on.
Oh, geez. A couple Mensa members.
Yeah, I'm going to find something, and I'll get something posted for you, Strutty.